What's good, everybody? Welcome to Origin Story, the podcast that interviews creators about where they came from to understand how they got here. My name's Philip Russell, and I'm with my co-host,
Ben Thorpe.
And Ben, they thought they could get rid of us, but here we are.
Here we are. I mean, they can't see us, but we have both aged, I mean, considerably since the last time that people heard us. The wrinkles in my face, the receding hairline, it's getting pretty noticeable, you know?
We've gone full Interstellar in here. we are back. We wanted to make a kind of interlude in between episode now that we just completed season one with the Cautious Clay interview a couple weeks back, and just talk about, you know, how the season went, what we've been thinking about in terms of origin story and the future of origin story, and kind of just you know, shoot the shit a little bit about what it's like to make a podcast like this.
Yeah, totally. And I think thinking about, you know, why we're doing this, what we like, what's moving forward, things that might change, you know, just the basics. And kind of thinking about that, Phil, we got an interview from a listener, Dylan, who has actually interviewed us a couple times.
That's important to note.
Yeah, an email. What did I say?
An interview.
Jesus, God.
Out of practice over here.
Talk about aging. It's important to note that he's already emailed us because he starts with saying, "Whoa, hey, longtime listener, big fan. Wow, this is definitely the first time I've interacted with this podcast." Nice. I think the game designer interviews are probably the freshest eps on the podcast because that's a type of creator that doesn't get interviewed in this format. Additionally, there's a lot about narrative and story that goes into games design in a way that we don't think about. So those have always been my favorite eps. As a listener, games are probably what I like to hear from most, but the musician and novelist interviews have been super interesting interludes. Definitely good to keep the variety. I think, Phil, this kind of touches on, like when we first started out, you talked about like the thesis of this in a lot of ways is like, hey, games designers don't get talked to in the same way that like writers or musicians do. I want to kind of fill that space. And I think like Dylan is kind of echoing that back to you.
Yeah, for sure. I think Dylan is right. And that, you know, the game space, it's not that there isn't interviews with game creators, game developers. In fact, there's like a breadth of them. But with when they're so focused on like, hey, we made a new Assassin's Creed game, or hey, we made a new Halo, and like, here are the features. What gets lost is some of those nuances that come in with, you know, creating like these big projects that take years to make, right? And I think something that I've been thinking a lot about, and, you know, we've been talking a lot about is, you know, these interviews are interesting because I think it's not unfair to say that there's certain properties that we, you know, read, listened to, played that maybe we didn't like that much, or maybe there was friction points where we were like, huh, I don't like this mechanic or this story beat. And for most people, like, they're not going to get a chance to talk to the person who made the thing or a person who, you know, helped make the thing and kind of work through like, hey, this choice that you made, I don't know if this is the right one. Can you maybe talk me through what your thought process was in doing that? And we did get that chance. And I think that's something that I'm really valuing, looking back at this first season, is just thinking about the nuances that come into creating these projects and how, you know, hearing somebody's process, hearing somebody's intentionality can really, you know, drastically change your perspective on a piece, even if ultimately you're still like, I don't know if I'd want to play that again or read that again.
Totally. I'm gonna put myself in danger and just like say straight up, you know, one of those for me was Spiritfarer, where it's like, I think the game mechanics in a lot of ways I was super frustrated by. It's like they felt kind of mundane. They felt, you know, kind of tedious to me. And then, you know, we had an opportunity to talk to one of the designers on that. And he was like, oh, well, this is intentional because I think about, you know, caring hospice care as being kind of the mundane day-to-day routines. And how do you like help people work through that feeling? And like, that's an intentional feeling that we're trying to give you. And so like, in some ways it's complicated, right? Because I'm like, well, like I'm coming here because I want to play a nice fun game. But at the same time, I'm like, oh, having that conversation made me think about that in a smart way and changes, I think, the relationship to a mechanic like that, where I'm like, well, this isn't a mistake. This is by design. This is something that's trying to make me think about something or feel about something in a certain way that I probably wouldn't have gotten otherwise. And so I think, yeah, like this is why these kinds of interviews are interesting, is because, yeah, you can have these friction points and then unpack them. Like, here's why this didn't work for me, and then have a better understanding of like, well, why is it there?
Yeah. And I think kind of having these open and honest conversations in a way that's not so, you know, like for instance, in games journalism, it's not to say that there aren't people who are asking these questions like, hey, this thing didn't hit right, or this mechanic wasn't really working for me. Can you talk about that? Oftentimes in a lot of interviews, it's a very much so like a prepared answer. Like, here's what we were thinking. I think when it comes from this kind of more just organic, like we're just having a conversation. We just want to hear your perspective on, you know, how you came to the decisions that you did with this property or, you know, this content. I think the Spiritfarer one is like a perfect example, because I also was like, not really that interested in that game. You know, like I remember leading up to the interview, I was like really dreading it, because I just wasn't like vibing with the game. It wasn't like a game that I would want to normally play. And I still don't really, you know, like, but I think like listening to Nick talk about the game and hearing some of those behind the scenes stories, specifically like the ones you're talking about, of how, you know, he went to hospitals and talked to people and how that influenced the game, and also how, you know, some of the characters are just based off of other employees' like loved ones. It really brings in that humanity into the project that you're just not going to get if you just read like the press materials or watch a trailer or even play it necessarily.
Yeah, 100%. The other thing that, you know, I think that these longer interviews, and I think just this show has really helped me do, is like hone what I find interesting, like in a piece of work, and like what I find frustrating or what I find complicated, or like help me kind of unpack what are my relationships to a like a given thing. And the thing that I have kind of kept coming back to with starting with that Matthew Sagey Burns, a story about kind of tech companies in Seattle that I think, again, and we talked to him pretty explicitly about this, about how, at least for me, until that later part of the game, feels like it's like, it's letting you sample all the smorgasbord of opinions around tech. But it doesn't, until you get to the end, have like a very clear thesis. And I think for me, I'm realizing, maybe from that interview, but especially, you know, we talk about all the different kinds of media that we engage with, and I'll come back and I'll be like, you know, I feel like the message of that was like really buried. And I'm realizing that I think subtlety to me is something that is fine maybe on the margins, but like the thesis of a piece of work or a piece of art, I'm realizing needs to be pretty explicit. Otherwise, I feel often frustrated by it, because I'm like, well, people could miss it. I could miss it, you know, like it's not enough. Again, not to loop in Dune, but I'm going to loop in Dune. It's not enough to use a, you know, frame on Timothée Chalamet's face that might indicate to you that maybe there's something villainous going on in that character. You have to do something a little bit more. And so I think having those conversations with an artist about like how they're thinking about politics in a game and how they're trying to get their message across has really helped me kind of develop, well, how do I think about messaging and subtlety in a game or in a novel?
Yeah, for sure. And like, who knows, maybe there's a Dune spoiler cast or something to be had in the future. Like, you know, I just wrote, Ben's read it already, but I wrote this piece for Unwinnable, kind of talking about some of the ideas that Ben's getting at with the new Dune film, and how, yeah, like I think we're kind of at a point where, you know, in games, you know, I think games is probably like more recent, but, you know, novels have obviously been doing it for a long time. Films have been doing it for a long time. Like, we're dealing with kind of subject matter like fascism and, you know, police brutality, things like that, where, you know, these are very concrete, important to get right messages. And I think especially in the game space, there's a lot of hesitance to just like state things as they are. Like, I think Tali did a good job of talking about that and why he didn't, you know, make these messages so subtle in Umurangi Generation. Is like, maybe, like, it's great we're dealing with these subject matter. It's great that we're seeing more media kind of experiment with how they work through these complex ideas. But I think it's important to, like, make clear, like, that's what we're talking about, right? And it's not a message that you want to get wrong or to have, like, misinterpreted, you know? And I think this all goes back to, like, these interviews where I've just been thinking a lot about, you know, you and I were both creative people, and I'm sure, like, if we were in the hot seat and people are critiquing our own work, there's a number of blind spots and, you know, things we got wrong, right?
Totally.
And I think something, especially when you're just, like, surfing Twitter or talking to your friends about a specific work, it's easy to just kind of go for the most, like, bad faith, like, cynical, like,
flat take,
you know, take. And I do that all the time. And I think talking to the creators throughout all these interviews, it's just been a good reminder of, like, ultimately, you know, we're all just human, you know, we're all just kind of floundering, trying to make these things that we do, because we don't know what else to do, you know, like, it's just part of our being, as, like, creative people. And, I think I've been feeling that a lot lately with kind of getting back into my own creative work. Like, for instance, talking to Greg and Alexis for Chicory, you know, we talked a lot about it on that episode and after the episode, but, like, just finishing things, like, putting yourself out there and allowing yourself to get things wrong is just as important as getting it right, you know?
Right. And that it's like, it's okay to have, there's nothing wrong with, I think, like, subtlety or nuance, like, in a conversation. That's good and important. But, you know, but doing, I think, your best to be clear about where you're coming from and like having a positionality, I think, is something that I'm circling as, like, oh, this is something that I really value and think is super, super important.
For sure.
But, you know, on the flip, I think, as you're saying, not letting the fear of not communicating correctly or ideally also, like, choke out ever saying anything or, like, ever putting anything out there.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, you know, this show, you know, my hope is that, you know, people listen to it and it allows, you know, especially in the game space, these developers, designers, storytellers to, like, get more opportunities to present, you know, their process to an audience that oftentimes doesn't get a chance to understand, like, why these choices are being made, and, like, the human connection that influences them, right? Out of curiosity, Ben, like, what were some of your favorite moments or favorite interviews from the season?
Matthew Seiji Burns, as I already said, great interview. Love talking to him. Boy, I actually really loved, and I know that we talked about this, talking to the musicians a lot. You mm-hmm. know, I think talking to Jeff Pianki was a lot of fun. And I think in a lot of ways was, like, good and interesting because I think both of us, like, feeling like we're talking to an author or feeling, you know, there's some similar overlap with game design in terms of narratives. And I think music to me felt kind of new and felt like it got me out of my comfort zone. And so it was like thinking about things in a very new way that I just really enjoyed. You know, when we talked to Heat Maps and he talked about writing things that were fictional but trying to get at real feelings. Boy, I still come back to that. I'm just thinking about, you know, things that like really resonated and things that I was like, ooh, well, I guess I'm going to think about songs very differently now. So yeah, I think those musician episodes for me were like really stand out.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like you said, the musician interviews, because like I don't play music and I don't have a background in like understanding how somebody like makes music, you know, like I don't have the terminology, whereas like, you know, I'm like very well educated in like literature and storytelling and narrative. Like I feel comfortable having those conversations. The musicians, I think, was a really refreshing experience because of that kind of discomfort and kind of put me in a place of like having to feel like it's okay to be wrong or to just acknowledge when I don't know. Like I think one of the big moments that I really appreciated, although he's not a musician, is Neil Jones, when he was talking about Never Yield and specifically journalists and like the importance of, you know, acknowledging when you don't know. Like ultimately, another reason why these interviews are important is because it opens up a space for the experts to educate us on, you know, any given topic, right? Like I don't need to know everything about music in order to have mm-hmm. these conversations. And in fact, when I don't, it allows so much more to happen, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like, right. Like we do a lot of prep for these interviews. We try, I think, to like ask incisive, insightful questions, right? And to like, to know to a certain degree, but also being okay with, and I like, being okay with like asking pretty basic questions and not knowing, right, I think is also that space where we're like, yeah, this is nice. This feels good to be able to acknowledge that and just like have that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I feel almost like all the interviews where I like a day or two before I was kind of going into them thinking like, oh, this is going to be bad. Or like, or like, damn, I don't know what to ask or... Uh-huh. Or whatever. Those ones ended up being like amazing. Like that's how I felt with Spirit Fair. I even remember, you know, talking to somebody like a day before and being like, man, I just don't even want to do it. Like, what if we just like cancel it? You know,
right? And we don't like feel prepared. Oh, what's gonna happen? Right? And like, I think we talked about this a lot before and afterwards. Where we're like, oh my god, we feel underprepared. We don't really know what we're getting into, and then. I think, yeah, that place of discomfort led to some like really good questions and some really good interactions and just like makes it more interesting in some ways. I think for us, hopefully also for listeners, but who knows?
Yeah, that's the hope. Yeah. And then I think on the flip side, you know, something I've been really grappling with is like, you know, the reality of making a show like this for Ben and I, like Ben and I both have full-time jobs. We both, you know, do creative work on the side outside of our full-time jobs. And then obviously we have everything going on in our lives, like, you know, that we do outside of work and play. And we somehow find a way to work an origin story into that. So like there'd be times where we had to play a game or read a book or whatever, like in a week, and then like prepare all the questions for it. And then since we were releasing on a cadence of every week, like also edit through the episode on top of, you know, our full-time jobs. And in Ben's case, it's like he already works in radio. So there is definitely a level of like, man, I'm doing all this work and I want people to see it. Right. And I've been thinking a lot about how that bleeds into the experience of making a show like this. So like, for instance, the Cautious Clay interview that we just put out a couple weeks ago, you know, as I said in the interview, like I've been listening to his music for years. I like love it. When we reached out to get an interview with him, like I did not think we'd even get it, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah. And it was really, really great to talk with him. But there was like a lot of kind of, I wouldn't say negative, but just like uncomfortable or like not ideal kind of things that went along with that, like having to go through a PR person and kind of work through this weird, like, tell us what your metrics are, like, as if like we don't have, you know, as if they like we're not worth the time, you know. And I like and I think, you know, we released the episode, and I think like I was thinking that it would be really, really successful, because he has such a broad reach around the world. And like, not to get into the weeds of like the analytics of the show or whatever, but like, it's one of our lower performing episodes. And that is like kind of interesting, because I think in some ways we were hoping like, oh, this one's gonna like really blow up. And although I liked the conversation and I'd love to talk to him again, it's interesting how that kind of stuff can sour the experience a bit. And if anything, it's a reminder of just like, hey, I'm doing this because I like doing it, not because I want tens of thousands of people to listen to it, right? And I feel like when we started the project back in July or whenever that was, like, I think I've grown so much as a creative person myself, just listening to all these conversations and thinking about work in this way.
Yeah, and I feel like we've had this conversation a couple of times, but it's like worth putting out there that it's like, it can be so hard to disentangle those two things, where it's like, what is the value of the conversation, or what is the value of putting something out there, or what is the value of talking to this person, and how do those, like, can you find a value in it for yourself outside of a bunch of people will look at it, right, or a bunch of people will listen to it, and being comfortable with like, oh hey, like, this particular episode might not perform well, but it's still useful and valuable regardless. And I think you can intellectually, I guess, acknowledge that on the one hand, but like, still on the other hand, it's hard to pull those apart, and it can feel as though it's a less valuable conversation because fewer people tuned in. And so I think like, just trying to find, and I think this is maybe one of the things we're thinking about moving forward with season two, is like, what are the conversations that we can be so excited about or like interested in having that it doesn't matter as much what the metrics are at the end of the day, right?
For sure. Yeah. Like, I think, you know, we started the at the top of this episode with an email from Dylan. And ultimately it's like, when I look at all the episodes, when I look at the analytics and all that, like, I don't care if the episode has like thousands of listens. It's, if anything, like, I really just love getting like an email from somebody. Like, if all of our episodes had like 10 people listen to them, but like one of those 10 sent us an email every time, like, that would be amazing. Because I think ultimately, like, I'm doing this because I like hanging out with my best friend Ben and talking to other creatives about the work that we enjoy, and then like talking to other people about it, you know. And I think going into season two, for me, I think I'm just really thinking of how, you know, continuing to find these interviews with people that I want to talk to and that we're interested in talking to, and like finding more ways that we can like engage with other people who are like listening to the show, you know, and just like bounce ideas back and forth. Because ultimately, like, it would be a lie for me to say, oh, I'm releasing this and it'd be completely okay if nobody listened to it, you know, like, you know, like, that's just a straight up lie. But what isn't a lie is like, hey, if fewer people listened to it, but I got to talk to somebody else about it, then that'd be amazing.
Yeah, 100%.
So with that in mind, I mean, maybe we can talk a little bit about what we were thinking with season two, and just, you know, just like throw some ideas out there. It's not like any of these are set in stone, but, you know, I think Ben and I have been going to bat back and forth of like, huh, what could season two look like that's a little bit different from season one?
Yeah. And so it's like, I think we should say we've got a couple interviews already on the back burner. Mm-hmm. And so like, that's still happening, but we're also thinking about like more conversational segments, with maybe someone who writes a review of a game. Kind of more casual pieces, just to like break down and like talk about games, and then you know, even more produced segments in some cases, where we talk about like, you know, like like do almost like a story lab around a given game or kind of an oral history of a game. So yeah, we're tossing around a bunch of different ideas about like where to go and what to do.
Yeah, 100%. Like even going off what I was just talking about, like we're really interested in just hearing a diversity of voices on the show and different perspectives. So whether that's a conversation episode where we invite, you know, a fellow a journalist or somebody who just has a really deep connection to book, game, movie, whatever, to come on and talk to us about it. That's one way we might approach some episodes. You know, Ben and I used to do a podcast called The Looncast with some friends that was a very, you know, produced, narrated, scripted show. So like, we're definitely interested in like maybe experimenting with an episode or something that's like, there's like some scripted narration and we talk through some complex thing based around an idea or a game or whatever. But more or less, this is all to say, like, I think right now we're in a moment where we're still doing the interviews. You can still expect to see, like, you know, these in-depth conversations with people across these interdisciplinary backgrounds. But we're also opening it up to just, you know, have some fun with some other ways that we might release episodes. And I think in conjunction with that, again, none of this is set in stone yet, but just thinking about, like, what the cadence is for the show. So, you know, this first season, it was an episode every week. And, you know, as I was saying earlier, like, it takes a lot of time to make these episodes.
A dude gets tired, you know?
It gets tired.
When am I sleeping? You got to ask some questions. When am I sleeping?
So, and I think, you know, when there's so many episodes to listen to, it can be a bit debilitating for a listener to like, oh, there's another one. It's not like you don't want to listen to, but it's like, damn, I don't have time to listen to another 1 hour thing. I haven't listened to the last 1 hour thing. So we're thinking about like, oh, what if we released, you know, twice a month instead of four times a month, or, you know, any variation on that. So that's all to say, I think right now Ben and I are just thinking about like what the show could evolve into while still keeping the same things that make it great. And if you all have ideas for that, then this is a perfect way to hit us up.
Thoughts, ideas, and even I think like some people or some games that you're interested in, you know, hit us up and we'll take a look at whether that's something that we'll take a run at. You can hit us up at @OriginStory_. You can also shoot us an email at theoriginstorypod@gmail.com.
And you can find me on Twitter at 3D Cisco. Where can they find you, Ben?
@sad_radio_lad.
And we just wanted to take a minute and thank Ryan Hopper for providing the awesome intro and outro music that you hear on every episode of Origin Story, as well as Melody Hirsch, who designed our awesome cover art and website.
That's the crew. Is there anything else, Phil, that we got to mention?
I think that's it. I mean, if you all, I'll say it again, if you all have ideas, questions, want to just tell us like, hey, that was like the most awesome episode I've ever listened to, then email us at theoriginstorypod@gmail.com. And as always, like, you know, the reviews are still rolling in, you know, so if you have a review and want to give us some stars on Apple Podcasts, that definitely helps us out and gets more eyes on the show. And, you know, we really appreciate that.
Season 2, it's in the works.
It's in the works. Coming soon. It'll come quicker than Final Fantasy 16. That's our only promise.
It'll probably come quicker than Silk Song.
Ooh. And with that, we will see you all again here shortly on the next episode of Origin Story.